Now, I will put this on the tape. I got an email from my sister Dottie out in Arizona. It says, I hope you enjoy this as I did. Subject, count your blessings. If you woke up this morning with more health than illness, you're more blessed than a million who will not live out the week. A million a week die. If you've never experienced the danger of battle, the loneliness of imprisonment, the agony of torture, or the pangs of starvation, you are ahead of 500 million people in the world. If you can attend a religious meeting, which we're doing now, without fear of harassment, arrest, torture, or death, you are more blessed than 3 billion people in the world. If you have food in your refrigerator, clothes on your back, a roof overhead, and a place to sleep, you are richer than 75% of the rest of the people in the world. If you have money in the bank, in your wallet, and a spare change dish somewhere, you're among the top 8% of the world's wealthy. If your parents are still alive and still married, I can say that to my children now, you are very rare, even in the United States. If you hold up your head with a smile on your face and are truly thankful, you are blessed because the majority can, but most do not. If you can hold someone's hand, hug them, or even touch them on the shoulder, you are blessed because you can offer God's healing touch. If you can read this message you just received, a double blessing, and that someone was thinking of you, and furthermore, you're more blessed than over 2 billion people in the world who can't read at all. Have a good day, count your blessings, and pass this along to remind everyone else how blessed we are. Do you know what the source of all of our blessings really is? God Almighty, the Creator God. He came down through Jesus Christ of Nazareth, and He gave mankind a law. And I want to go back and rehearse that by turning to the 19th chapter of the book of Exodus. When I was a boy, the then Oregon Conference of the Church of God Seventh Day had a big chart on the wall. And as a part of the services, it was over on the right-hand side of the podium, they actually all stood up and recited aloud, not the Lord's Prayer, but the Ten Commandments. And that's how I came to learn it by heart, because I'd heard it so many hundreds of times growing up, and of course would recite it when I was a little lad with my mother and my father. Now, Exodus, the 19th chapter. In the third month, when the children of Israel were gone forth out of the land of Egypt, the same day they came into the wilderness of Sinai. For they departed from Rephidim, and were come to the desert of Sinai, and had pitched in a wilderness, and there Israel camped before the mount. Moses went up unto God, and the Eternal called unto him out of the mountain, saying, Thus shall you say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, You have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings, and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed, and keep my covenant, then you shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be unto me a kingdom of priests. What does a priest do? A priest stands for God and administers the worship of the true God. He is a teacher. He's a counselor. He's an example. He is a person who is there to tell you what God's thoughts are and about your conduct in relationship to God's thoughts and God's laws, and in a holy nation, a whole nation that would be like a kingdom of priests. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. And Moses came and called for the elders of the people and laid before their faces all these words which the Eternal commanded him. And all the people answered together and said, All that the Eternal has spoken, we will do. I've talked time and again about the Old Covenant and the New Covenant, and that the covenant is an agreement about something, that a covenant is an agreement between two parties to do or to perform some thing or other. The covenant is one thing and the law is another. The law and the covenant are, in the sense, separate, that the covenant is an agreement for them to keep the law. It is not the law itself. All right, here is them responding to God's proposal. God will, if they obey Him, give them the greatest blessings. They will have all these blessings you read of in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. of rain in due season, of long lives, of no diseases, of Egypt, of perfect health, of happy babies, and of prosperity, of protection from their enemies from without, of no taxation, 10% flat tax that went to God and to the Levites only. Wouldn't it be absolutely fabulous if you and I could keep 90% of all that we earn? Wouldn't that be a horrible burden off our backs if we could keep 90%? And that's the way it ought to be. So the people agreed and they said, we will keep that. We will do all that God has commanded us. And Moses returned the words of the people unto the Eternal. And the Eternal said unto Moses, lo, I come to thee in a thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with thee, and believe thee forever. So he was going to manifest, at least through a cloud, with a loud voice. Obviously, since Christ said no man has heard the voice of God, it would be through the voice of an archangel. And Moses told the words of the people unto the Eternal. The Eternal said to Moses, go unto the people and sanctify them today and tomorrow. Let them wash their clothes. I know that all of us always dress up to come to church. We always wash, bathe, and groom ourselves to appear before God, because God does say, be ye clean, you that bear the vessels of the Eternal. And so in order to appear before God, you always appear clean physically. And be ready against the third day, for the third day the Eternal will come down in the sight of all the people upon Mount Sinai. And you shall set bounds unto the people round about, saying, be careful, take heed of yourselves, don't go up to the mount or touch the border of it. Whoever touches the mountain will surely be put to death. There shall not an hand touch it, but he shall surely be stoned or shot through, that is, with a spear or an arrow. Whether it be beast or man, it shall not live. When the trumpet sounds long, they shall come up to the mount. Moses went down from the mount unto the people and sanctified the people, and they washed their clothes. And he said, be ready against the third day, come not at your wives. It came to pass on the third day in the morning that there were thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud upon the mount, and the voice of the trumpet exceeding loud, so that all the people that were in the camp trembled. Tremendous display of power and energy and force, noise, a visual display of tremendous cloud, and no doubt the lightning flashing around from within the cloud, just like a huge thunderstorm, but far bigger and greater and more powerful than anything we have seen. And Moses brought forth the people out of the camp to meet with God, and they stood at the nether part of the mount. And Mount Sinai was altogether on a smoke, because the Eternal descended upon it in fire, and the smoke thereof ascended as the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mount quaked greatly. God actually shook the earth when he came down, and it's the one we know of as Jesus Christ of Nazareth. The proof is in John 1 and Hebrews 1 and many other texts in the Bible. And when the voice of the trumpet sounded long and waxed louder and louder, Moses spake, and God answered him by a voice. And the people heard some kind of a huge rumbling voice. The people heard it. They saw all of this. I would have been probably my knees knocking together, my hair standing straight up, my eyes about this big. I would have been covered with goose pimples. I'd have been probably flat on my face and peeking at this thing and wondering, what in the world? I'm not going to be able to survive it. It would have been an awesome display. And certainly, and there would have been perhaps up to 3 million men, women, and children that saw all of this going on. So, the Eternal came down upon Mount Sinai on the top of the mount, and the Eternal called Moses up to the top of the mount, and Moses went up. Interesting, isn't it? If one of those people or even their animals were to even touch it, the mountain itself, the proper mountain, they could be back out there in a plane seeing the huge mountain rising up. They would die. But Moses walked right on up there. So he was completely exempt. He was the only one that was qualified to appear before God. And that was a great testimony and a witness to them all by itself. And the Eternal said unto Moses, go down, instruct, charge, warn the people, lest they break through unto the Eternal to gaze. They want to see, and many of them will perish. And let the priests also, which come near to the Eternal, sanctify themselves, lest the Eternal break forth upon them. And Moses said unto the Eternal, the people cannot come up to Mount Sinai, for you charged us, saying, set bounds against the mount and sanctify it. And the Eternal said, away, get you down, and you shall come up, you and Aaron with you, but let not the priests and the people break through to come up upon the Eternal, lest he break forth upon them. So Moses went down to the people and spake unto them. And God spake all these words, saying, Now, do you think God spake those words only to Moses? Read on and we will see. God spake, the eternal, here the word is, of course, from Elohim, saying, I am the JHVH, the Jehovah, the one who was, who is, and shall be, eternal thy Elohim, which have brought thee out of the land of bondage, out of the land of Egypt, rather, out of the house of bondage. This is a rumbling, huge voice that is speaking, and the people heard the voice and the thunderings and saw the lightning. It's not a private little conversation between God and Moses at all. A lot of people have confused this by thinking that this is a private meeting between God and Moses. But you see in the narrative here that God himself, the one we know of as Christ, is there on the mountain. And Moses is down to instruct the people, and God said, spake all these words, saying, I am the eternal your God. He didn't say this privately to Moses. Let's go on and read a little later on, and we'll find out. Now, thou shalt have no other gods before me. Do all of you have this memorized? Can you close your eyes and state it and not miss a line? You should be able to do so. And you ought to read it and reread it and read it over and over again until you could stand up and repeat the Ten Commandments with your eyes shut and with no Bible in front of you. If there is any part of the Bible that you ought to memorize, doesn't God say that it shall be as frontlets between your eyes? And doesn't he say in the New Covenant that he will write his law in our inward parts, in our hearts and in our minds? Now, if something is written in your mind, that's like they used to think that there was something they called memory wax way back when my father was a boy, and it was merely an analogy, like an imprint in wax. But it was like when you memorize something, that it's in your mind, it's completely memorized. The analogy of a modern computer is apt. When you have a hard drive computer, and you are using your computer, everything that comes into that computer is put into a memory section somewhere. It doesn't matter where, and maybe you can't find it. You can put it in a recycle bin, like a garbage dump in your computer, but you can also empty that if you want. But they do have software that is available called a window washer. For example, every email out of the thousands that I've received is still in there. Not anymore, because I've got my window washer and it's gone now. But every one of those letters and all the little stuff at the beginning of it and the end of it is in there. Now, I don't want to branch off into childbearing, but let's just say that every little baby that is born is like a hard drive. It is blank. And every impression that you feed into it, you are programming that hard drive, and it is in there. And every knowledge, every word, every experience, everything that they say and think and do, every influential person around them, everything that they have experienced as a little baby. Sometimes we forget, but the things that really impress us, people have always said that when something like in peril of your life, like some terrible trauma where you're about to die, it's like everything slows down and everything is in far more brilliant color. And I can tell you that is true because I've had a few narrow escapes, and that will so indelibly impress it upon yourself, you can relive that second by second on down through life, and you never do forget it. So if God Almighty says that he will, through the power of his Holy Spirit, write his Ten Commandments in your inward parts, in your mind and in your heart, then you will certainly be able to memorize them and know exactly what they say and not even miss a word. I also will comment just in passing that any church that calls itself, quote, a new covenant church, and yet is a church that claims to believe that the law of God is done away, is blatantly speaking a great and a blasphemous lie. It simply is incompatible. It cannot be. It's absolutely untrue, because the new covenant is to be made not with a church anyway, but with the house of Israel and the house of Judah, and consists of lifting the Ten Commandments to a spiritual plane to make it so that it reaches in all of its elements into every little nook and cranny of human behavior, so that each one of these 10 points can be applicable in all kinds of our human experiences in our lives as we go through life. Let's read them together. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in the heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. For I, the Eternal, your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Eternal will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. You remember because it is instituted in the second chapter of the book of Genesis, and you're looking back to creation, and you keep it holy because it was made holy. 6 days shalt thou labor. People forget that part of the commandment sometimes. There are an awful lot of lazy people who don't think they need to work, and they don't need to work at all, let alone 6 days, not even 5 days. They like to work about 3.5 or 4, but let's not get off the track here and preach a sermon about laboring. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Eternal your God. In it you shall not do any work, you nor your son, nor your daughter, your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger that is within your gates. For in 6 days the Eternal made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. And hallowed means to set apart, to sanctify, or to make holy. Honor your father and your mother while they're alive and after they've gone, you might add to that. That your days may be long upon the land which the Eternal your God giveth thee. A command with promise. You honor your parents, you're promised long life. Thou shalt not kill. Actually, the original Hebrew, thou shalt do no murder. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness against your neighbor. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. And all the people saw the thunderings and lightnings and the noise of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they removed and stood far off. And they said unto Moses, because they had heard all of this, they'd heard the rumblings, they'd seen the lightning, speak thou with us and we will hear, but let not God speak with us lest we die. And Moses said unto the people, fear not, for God is come to test, try, prove you, that his fear may be before your faces, that you sin not. And the people stood afar off, and Moses drew near unto the thick darkness where God was. And the Eternal said to Moses, thus you shall say to the children of Israel, you have seen that I have talked with you, the children of Israel, all of them, from heaven. You shall not make me gods of silver, begins to elaborate. Neither shall you make unto you gods of gold. An altar of earth you shall make unto me, and shall sacrifice thereon your burnt offerings and your peace offerings, thy sheep and thine oxen. In all places where I record my name, I will come unto thee, and I will bless thee. And if you will make me an altar of stone, you shall not build it of hewn stone. Simply get natural rocks and pile them together and build a cairn of rocks and use it as an altar. Nor lift up your tool upon it, because they'll get decorative. You want to build a face into it, want to make it look like something. And then they would be tempted to create an idol. For if you do that, you have polluted it. Neither shall you go up by steps unto mine altar. It was not to be a raised altar like a pyramid or like the ones down in Mexico. That your nakedness be not discovered thereon. Interesting language, isn't it? Why do you suppose he said that? Well, if you look into ancient history and you look into the fact that all nations, all tribes, all languages, all civilizations have tried to find God. They've tried to seek God. They've tried to get to know about a God who might be, when he's angry, causing a storm. He might be, when he is angry, causing lightning. He might be, when he is angry, starting a forest fire from a bolt of lightning. When he is happy and pleased, he might be providing you with a gurgling stream of nice, fresh, sky blue water to drink. And so the pagans began to realize, they knew all about life, of course, no matter how ignorant they were, and they knew that life was sustainable only by food and by water, and they tried to do those things which were pleasing, in the sight of the idea of God that they got in their demented, darkened mind, because they had not been called out of Egypt. They had not been God's chosen people. They had not been brought on eagle's wings. They had not seen the great mighty power of God break the hold of their taskmasters. They hadn't seen God's power and the plagues falling upon Egypt. And I'm talking now about anyone from the Mayas, Toltecs, Incas, Aztecs, Mandans, Chapultepecs. You can name them whether the Pala or the Mojave or whatever Indian tribes you want. But I'm talking also about people all over Asia and all over Southeast Asia. And the people down in the Caribbean islands, and the people all over Central and South America, the people all over Africa, the Hutus and the Xhosas and the Matabele, and all the various tribes down there. And those people, in their own way, said the Apostle Paul, when he was talking about the Areopagites, were seeking God. They knew that there was some power bigger, stronger, and greater than human life, and they thought that there must be something better and something beyond human life, and they sought to find out how to achieve that and what that was. From time immemorial, people have recognized a higher power. And so savages, lost in the stupidity of their own superstitions, would usually have some man or woman, and when you read really about anybody from the Sarawaks to the Mandan Indians, if you read about the islands of the South Pacific, about the Hawaiki, which is now we call Hawaii, and the people who migrated there because of the so-called fierce gods of the Fiji Islands that required too many human sacrifices. If you read about the population of some of the islands like Martinique, and St. Martin's, and of course Guadeloupe, and especially Barbados, and the early settlers there. If you read about the savages that the discoverers and the explorers encountered all over the world when Magellan made his trip clear around the world for the very first time, if you read about these people, they believed in things like lightning and thunder and sacred mountains. And they believed in clouds and rain and in forests. And they were spooky, and they were afraid of dark places. So they thought there were gods of the jungle and gods of the forest. And they thought there were gods of the harvest and gods of the rain. And they could see the movement of the planets. They could see the moon, but they didn't understand it. They could see the phases of the moon, but they couldn't fathom it. They could see the sun coming and going, but they didn't know that they lived in a vast, endless universe on little Earth that was making a yearly journey around the sun. They thought the sun made a journey around the Earth. And so they would pray to the sun to come back, come back. And they came up with the winter solstice and the idea of Pomona, the god of fruits and nuts. And I guess he was supposed to reside in California. But anyway, and they appropriate some of that into Christmas time. And they have all of these pagan carryovers today. And so when they would begin to sacrifice, they thought that they got an answer. They didn't understand cycles in nature, but didn't the sun shine? They knew where babies came from. That was obvious to them very, very early, that their human experiences and their animals. How many savage Stone Age societies are there around today? Lots of them, believe it or not. In the central mountain fastness of Mindanao, in the Philippines, there are people who to this day will commit cannibalism and will hunt heads. In some savage tribes, and there are few of them because the rape of the Mato Grosso in Brazil or the huge rainforest down there because of its hardwoods and all that has happened there to actually change the very climatic pattern of the earth to some extent has all but wiped out a lot of those savages. But there are some of the National Geographic people and the others that go down there, like Jacques Cousteau and some others, who have actually lived among some of these Indians, and some of the incredible things that they do are just mind-boggling. Utter, total savagery, just like thousands of years ago, no knowledge about modern things whatsoever. So they knew that seeds, when planted, would grow. They knew that animals reproduced. They decided when they heard thunder that it was the gods beating metal into swords and daggers. They believed when they saw the lightning flash that it was God blazing with anger. They believed that God expressed his displeasure by typhoons, hurricanes, and thunderstorms, and floods, and by sick babies and malnutrition, and death was an absolute fearful mystery to them. They hated it, they didn't like it, but they thought the way to stave it off, since there had to be a God of the dead, there had to be a Lord of the dead, there had to be an evil God that caused death, let's give him some live people, and maybe that'll ease his anger, and maybe he won't take as many of us as he would if we don't toss some of our little girls into the rain pool, or if we don't take our young virgins and get them all prepared for the 17th birthday and take them up to the top of the pyramid of San Juan Teotihuacan and slice their chest open and pull their heart out while it's still beating and have the priest screaming and thousands of Indians down there screaming and dancing and while he eats the thing while it's still beating. And they literally did this. So there were also little additives to this, and oftentimes the most important man in the community of any of these savage civilizations was, you guessed it, the religious fanatic, the shaman, the witch doctor, the priest. He could make up all kinds of garbage. He could make up a rattle. And he could make it out of bat's wings and maybe a goat's head, and he'd put a lot of junk on it and put little seeds inside of a gourd, and he could get in front of a sick child and shake it and do all kinds of things. But little by little, it all evolved. And one day, one of them decided, I think we ought to dance. And so they would stamp their feet and shuffle around. One day, one of them began beating on a log. I thought, that sounds good. Sound even better on a hollow log. So they invented a drum. And then they would dance and they would shriek and scream. Now that's been carried over right down to today, hasn't it? Matter of fact, the group that doesn't want us to meet where they are is a rock religious group of people who believe in praise worship, and they want to do it with rock music, which comes straight out of darkened Africa, which appeals to the human body with its rhythms to cause the hips to move in a certain way. And they call that religion. You know, you have to forgive me, but I've never been able to stand love songs to Jesus. I've never been able to stand rock and roll and call it religion. I've never been able to stand that. Now, maybe Christ is going to tell me, well, Garner Ted, you shouldn't have been so ecstatic about things like the Messiah and the Elijah and the great classics of Europe. And you shouldn't have enjoyed music like perhaps Bach and Brahms and Beethoven and some of those wonderful songs, because they were really written by pagan people too. But that's because I readily acknowledge that my tastes might be a little bit perverted just because I happen to like classical and semi-classical music and some popular music, and I cannot stand heavy metal. I cannot stand that heavy rock stuff and all of that, and especially I can't stand it when it is turned into a religious purpose. So someone would gain control over the entire community because he was the shaman. He was the holy man. And what do we have today? How far are we from the pagan jungles of Mindanao and the rainforests of Brazil? How far are the people who have decided, no, we don't think God appreciates it when we sing. We think he loves it when we don't say a word. And so we take a vow of silence and we walk around all of our lives fingering beads and peering through a little filigreed area at the people down there as the priest goes down and says mass, but we can never utter a word. We cannot whistle, we can't chant, we can't sing, we can't communicate. Our vocal cords just shrivel and dry up because we know that if we uttered a word, it would be displeasing to God. But if we're real quiet, God loves us. We're really special. Is there anywhere a shaman, a witch doctor, a religious leader, a holy Joe, a sky pilot, a priest, a minister, who calls himself the father of all of mankind? Is there anywhere a man who seems to have the power of life and death? I've been doing a little reading lately, and I've done a great deal of reading in the past. I wouldn't ever want to wade through Fox's Book of Martyrs again. I would never want to read about some of the grisly details of the Spanish Inquisition, about people being skinned alive, burnt at the stake, impaled, literally dismembered while they yet lived because they were branded a heretic. I wouldn't want to go back and read again about people who were pilloried, and that meant to put in stocks and blocks right out in the public square, and a man in a priestly robe because they had the misfortune of having sailed in a ship during the days of Queen Elizabeth. And after Henry VIII broke away from the Roman Catholic Church, and for a time Queen Mary almost went back. And if you remember your history, you remember that there were the Cavaliers who were for King Charles II after Charles I had been murdered. And there were also the Roundheads who went with Oliver Cromwell. And he, of course, was a person who believed in a parliamentary government and did not want to go back to an autocracy under a king or a monarchy. And for a time he was buried in Westminster Abbey, although a gang came in and actually unearthed the body, prized up the stones, overwhelmed the priest, and took the corpse out and hung it in a public square. Now, if you were found to be one of those who followed Cromwell, and you happened to be on a ship, and you were overtaken by a Spaniard, guess what happened to you? You were either shot on the spot, you were forced to walk the plank, you were weighted down with heavy metal and tossed overboard, you were skinned alive, you were stabbed, you were impaled, you were burnt, and the least thing that would happen to you, if you got off light, was to be pilloried and then have someone with a great branding iron, with a great big H on it for heretic, walk up and burn it right to the bone in your forehead. So the rest of your life, you lived with that. Now, if you go back to the Middle Ages, and all you've got to do is to look in a Halley's Bible Handbook. In its section toward the end of it, it's available in any Bible bookstore, the little thick blue book, Halley's Bible Handbook. Dr. Halley was a British subject, and he is long gone, but he did quite a work, and it's been upgraded over the years. And in the church history section, it lists all the popes, and it lays right at the door of many of them in the Middle Ages, the hundreds of thousands of deaths, almost 1 million deaths, even during the Protestant Reformation, all by itself. And of the heartless cruelty that has been heaped upon people in the name of religion. Now, back to where we are with regard to God's Ten Commandments. The first four of God's law tells us how to worship God. What is horrible? What is burdensome? What is evil? What is bad about it? There's only one God. We're to have no other gods before Him. Nothing is to get between us and our Creator who gives us every breath of air we breathe. You're not to demean yourself by thinking that God looks like a fish, a boar, a deer, an elk, a lion, an eagle, make something out of gold like an ox calf and bow down to it. So thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in the earth beneath or like the fish-headed god of some of the people around Israel. Thou shalt not make an image of that which is in the waters under the earth. You shall not bow down yourself to them nor serve them. For I, the Eternal, your God, am a jealous God, in the positive sense. If you are jealous of your family, if you're jealous of your home, if you are jealous of your reputation, if you're jealous of your promises, it means that you are very solicitous, that you are guarded toward them, that you hold them in very high esteem, that they're of great value to you. Visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children of the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, because it's a natural outcome. Generation after generation who hate God are going to suffer the consequences of their own actions. There was a man who came to one of the colonies in South America who told a horrible tale, and it actually happened, and he wrote it down. There was a modern Sodom and Gomorrah many centuries ago. Well, actually, it was in the mid-18th century, in the 1700s, about maybe 40 years before the American Revolution. And that was a place called Port Royal. And Port Royal was on a long, narrow sand spit, and I've been around it. I've actually landed because the runway of the major airport at Kingston, Jamaica, is on that sand spit where Port Royal used to be. Now, Port Royal today is only a little tiny fragment of what it used to be. There was a huge area of land there. And it was a place where the buccaneers and the pirates, Morgan, Blackbeard, and a lot of the rest of them, came to cavort. And all of them, mostly English, met there with their spoils, and there were all kinds of dozens of women brought there, and all kinds of slaves, and it was more than a wide-open town. There was an average of like 19 to 20 murders every single night in Port Royal. There was venereal disease, there were open sewers, there were brothel after brothel after brothel, there were wine shops and grog shops, one after another, crowding together, there were little hovels and shacks. And when the buccaneers and the seafarers came ashore, they indulged in every orgy that you can begin to imagine. And the man who finally made it to one of the colonies and told his story said that he'd seen a phenomenal thing. He was actually out approaching the harbor when from a distance he saw the land begin to move. And in the midst of all of this, there were even some churches, believe it or not. So the people would go to church on a Sunday after they'd been out carousing all week long in the brothels and the wine shops. And he said the steeples began to disappear. And he said the earth opened up and the entire city disappeared beneath the waves. And thousands of people died. I think as I read that story that maybe God got so angry with that filthy, rotten city where those freebooters were wallowing in gold and silver and purple and finery and wealth and were in such an orgy of profanity and sin and crime that God could stand it no longer. And so the entire city was destroyed, and only a fraction of it remained above the waves, which can be seen today. And actually, beneath the waves, you can still see some of the old portions of the stone buildings that were destroyed by that earthquake that caused that whole city to sink right into the sea. Isn't that fantastic? That there has been a more modern Sodom and Gomorrah that I think Almighty God decided not to spare. If you read the rest of these commandments, it is how to love your neighbor. The very basis of law is found in the Ten Commandments. And for people to think in any manner, shape, or form that the Ten Commandments are done away is just so illogical. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever, and yet they will have these trick texts, and we've been through that time and time again in the book of Galatians, the book of Colossians, so that we know the real truth that Jesus Christ said, "Think not, I'm come to destroy the law or the prophets, I'm not come but to fulfill." In 1 Samuel 15, 22 and 23, Samuel was chastising Saul because Saul had kept alive some of the sheep and he had not done exactly as God had said. And Samuel said, "Hath the Eternal as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Eternal? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry." Now, a parent that perhaps is not really the kind of child the kind of a person who is rearing the child correctly, parenting as they call it today, but the proper kind of an example and a disciplinarian, might be absolutely stunned if a parent came home and heard mutterings out of the bedroom and walked in there and found the daughter or the son playing with little dolls with a pin sticking it in there and mumbling a lot of mumbo jumbo and practicing witchcraft. But here's a scripture in the Bible that says a child who is a rebel, who rebels, or any of us who rebel against God, are in the same bailiwick. We're in the same genre. I mean, we're actually guilty of witchcraft because it's just as bad in God's sight if we rebel against God. Because you have rejected the word of the Eternal, He's rejected you from being king. Jeremiah 7, 22 and 23 is a good one to memorize. "I spake not unto your fathers, nor commanded them in the day that I brought them out of the land of Egypt, concerning burnt offerings or sacrifices, did he?" No, he spoke the Ten Commandments. Why were the sacrifices then put upon them at all? After he came down, Moses came down with the codified laws, while he was gone to get them written, God first came down and delivered them himself orally. And all the people heard them and fled and stood afar off. Moses went back up to the mount and got them in tables of stone. And during that 40 days and 40 nights when he comes back down, the people have made them a golden calf and they're having an absolute orgy. And Moses, in absolute disgust, thinking that everything has been shattered, couldn't think of anything to do, but because they were breaking the law so brazenly, he just took them and hurled them down in total revulsion and disgust, thinking, "God's going to kill every last one of us." And so then, of course, he, as you know, caused them to beat that thing up into fine gold and to sprinkle it in the creek or the river and actually made them drink the water to show that it was of absolutely no power whatsoever. "I spake not unto your fathers, nor commanded them in the day that I brought them out of the land of Egypt concerning burnt offerings or sacrifices, but this thing commanded I them, saying, obey my voice. And I will be your God, and you shall be my people, and walk you in all the ways that I have commanded you, that it may be well with you." It means peace. And I know there's not any peace over there right now, and I know a lot of people that mouth that word, of course, are not peaceful people sometimes. But anyway, that is a very wonderful greeting. Peace. I remember some of our early students in Ambassador College used to greet one another that way. Peace. You know, let me say that. That's nice. To which you are called in one body, and be ye thankful, which is why I read what I did in the beginning. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom. Isn't that easy sitting here in our seats? Isn't it easy at church? Isn't it easy when we're thinking those thoughts? But yet, when we have these problems come along where some human being does something that just about bends us out of shape and gets us so angry we can't handle it, then all of a sudden there isn't all of this word of Christ dwelling richly in our hearts with all wisdom, and all of a sudden we're not any longer long-suffering, and all of a sudden we're not forgiving, and we're not humble, and we're not meek, and we're not kind, but we're angry, and we're ravening, and we are threatening to throw someone either through a plate glass window or into the lake, or go out and carve your initials in his chest with a knife or something, and to bring him around to your way of thinking. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. That's why it was so wonderful, like on the next to the last day of the feast, when we got together up there with about 35 or 40 people that were just so crowded, I couldn't have counted them all, and sat around with a couple of guitars, and we sang a lot of the old songs that America has almost forgotten, and sang, you know, even like Red River Valley, for pity's sake. Most of our children don't even know that, haven't even heard it, and sang the hymns out of the hymnal, and sing some of the really wonderful songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. The way that I'll tell you now, it's been mentioned, so I've just got to be right out forthright about it. I am going to be able, God willing, to go hunting again this year. The word got all around the church, so I can't hide that from you. I normally don't say that on the tape program. Some people take issue with that, and I think they think maybe we shouldn't kill an animal. We may have a few vegetarians. We may have a few tree huggers. I told you about the bumper sticker that said to save a whale. Anyway, that's another point. But I just share with you that I think there are moments in prayer when I'm out in the mountains, especially at night looking up at the stars, but seeing the sunrise or the sunset and being where I can't see anything that the hand of man has even touched, and where I can see huge trees and rocks and mountaintops with snow on them, like in my private cathedral, when I can say how great thou art and have tears in my eyes and feel closer to God when I'm out in God's handiwork than I can at any other time of the year. It's just absolutely wonderful. And then when we're together as God's people singing in like a sing-along in a very relaxed environment with good food and wine and friends and camaraderie and everything and enjoying that, it is just a tremendous emotional experience to be able to enjoy that together. Isn't that what this is saying that it's all about? Now, where do we find in the way of life that Almighty God gives us that wonderful Feast of Tabernacles, the fabulous, sobering meaning of the Lord's Supper and the Passover, the beautiful Days of Unleavened Bread and making my Norska pancakes that we do every morning and enjoying those during that time of the year, and all of the annual holy days of God, and a weekly reminder. He didn't make the week 8 days long or 9 days. We might forget 8 or 9 days. He made it 7 days. Make sure that after 6 days, remember the Sabbath day. So weekly we come together and we review together, mentally and emotionally, the thoughts from God's Word and the way we ought to be living our lives. What is there about what we are doing here that is a yoke of bondage? Brethren, there are churches that hate what we do. There are churches that hate the Sabbath. They hate the holy days. They hate everything we stand for. They hate the message we preach. That's hard to believe, but it happens to be the truth. So that statement that I gave about if you're able to meet together without harassment and even in some cases fear of death, be very, very thankful, because there are millions of people that cannot do that. There are many nations where you could go where we would not be able to find any place to meet together. It has nothing to do with whether we can pay for it, whether it's large enough, or whether the people don't want us in there. You simply, if you identified yourself as an American all by itself, no matter what your religion. I can name nation after nation after nation where your life is in terrible jeopardy. Let's start with Iraq. All over this world, people of the Islamic faith would like to kill us. People of many different religions that are really a savage religion. When you think of a religion, it's so savage that it promises you a higher position in nirvana, wherever you're going to go, if you can blast to bits all kinds of other innocent people, women and children, while you killed yourself as a suicide. That is a hateful, rotten, satanic, abominable religion. It is not a religion of love at all, but it's held by over 800 million human beings. Well, I want to give you one statement that I did in my television program the other day in closing. You all know about the bicycle and the guy that was peddling into a market. You know about the car bomb in one of the big markets in Jerusalem the other day. And I just will say this to terrorists, as I said on my television program, may all of your bombs go off early.